times they go into liens. So the payment rate is actually pretty low. It's approximately 15 to 20%.
We don't want BDS to be another driver of displacement. And what my office found when we looked across the city at where liens were most heavily concentrated, they were in more rapidly gentrifying areas, and they tended to be on lower-income residents. So I feel very strongly that we want to help people get into compliance, help them make their homes safe and livable, and help them retain those homes, not to look at it as another revenue stream.
I'm fine with that as long as they're bringing it into compliance, but living out in East Portland and talking to a lot of residents, we're not seeing a lot of those properties becoming into compliance. So, and sometimes it takes the stick to get someone to do something.
I mean, as far as the extreme distressed and zombie houses, we're going hard on those. But I'm talking about people who actually live in their homes, who for whatever reason are struggling, whether they're low income, elderly, disabled, whatever. We don't want to create more hardship for those households.
Actually, and I support that part, and with housing and their homeowner repair programs and stuff, because I feel the same way. I'm thinking more of the multifamily that are not coming into compliance.
Oh, okay. Well, I have my own ideas about what to do about them. Save those for later.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
Excellent presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Portland Parks and Recreation. And we have a little longer for this one. We have Portland Parks and Recreation from 10:30 until 11:30.
What is your plan to come every day?
I was going to say, what is this?
You're going to overwhelm us with good news on a daily basis.
So I want to know that it's actually 35 past, so we're starting 5 minutes late. We'll try to get us back on time, though. Also, while staff is getting settled, thank you, Council, for your engagement with the Washington Park Plan yesterday, a glorious celebration of one of our gems. And also, I mean, yesterday was the day to thank Emily Roth and the Champions Committee and the community for all of their work. Thanks to Mike Abate as well. It's really exemplified how working with the partners at the Washington Park, you heard from each of them, they each had different viewpoints, bringing them all together to get that plan done was not insignificant. And thank you, Mike, for your leadership on that. It really exemplifies what we're facing here in parks, that parks actually is it's community engagement and equity work, but with the staff facilities and the enthusiastic participation that is sometimes more challenging in some of the other bureaus. So a very difficult budget once again after so many years of cut, asking for to find 5% cuts, and the City Budget Office recommending 4% cuts in parks, which is greatly distressing. I expect to see a lot of turnout at the community meetings from people who are very upset that we had to do that. And so I just want to recognise that I don't like the cuts. In fact, I don't like many of them. I seriously don't like, and want Mike to tell us all about them, what we had to do.
Thank you, Commissioner, Mayor, Council, members of the Budget Advisory Committee. I'm Mike Abate, Director of Portland Parks and Recreation. It's an honor to present Parks' requested budget, and the entire Bureau is really grateful for your support over the years, particularly your recognition of the health benefits and economic vitality that Parks brings to our community. With me today is Pat Frobes, the Chair of Portland Parks Board, and Amy Archer Masters, our Finance, Property, and Technology Manager. As you know, getting to this point in a budget process is a lot of work, so I want to make sure that our senior management team is recognized, our very diverse and large Budget Advisory Committee, who worked tirelessly on a difficult budget, and certainly our labor partners, all of whom gave their time and talent to propose the difficult choices we're going to discuss with you today. There we go. This slide, so we're on
slide two.
If you have the handouts, gives you just a snapshot of the size and breadth of your park system. Portland's parks, public places, natural areas, recreational opportunities give life and vibrancy to our city. These essential assets connect people to place, to self, and to others. Portland Park system is about more than just places, though. It's also about programs and people. Portland Parks and Recreation leverages the work with volunteer contributions averaging over the value of 220 FTEs, or somewhere between $5 and $6 million per year. Just a testimony to great community support. Many of the activities that PPNR participates in are very well known and very familiar, but there are a couple of things that you may not know. For example, we have the responsibility for emergency tree management, particularly during weather events, and manage the city's urban forest. We also have responsibility for responding and supporting the life and safety issues through our park rangers, including dealing with homelessness and livability issues. For each of the numbers that you see on the slide there, there's a base level of operations that must be maintained. The Bureau has an operating budget of about slightly over $150 million, with roughly $60 million of that in general fund. When you combine that with earned revenue streams and other funds, we employ about 625 full-time employees and almost 3,000 part-time seasonal employees. Thanks to Commissioner Fish's leadership and Commissioner Saltzman before him, Portland Parks and Recreation was awarded the gold medal for best managed parks system in the U.S. in 2011. However, after years of cuts, the city's ability to maintain this level of excellence is in jeopardy. So let's begin with strategic direction and significant issues and how the budget packages relate to that. Portland Parks and Recreation's work continues to focus on advancing the goals of the Parks 2020 vision, which is the foundation of the Bureau's strategic plan for 2017 to 2020, and you each have a copy of that. But the next long-range vision will need to address issues that weren't imagined in the last process. That was 2001 is when the Council last adopted the 2020 vision. More on that later. In the meantime, our three-year strategic plan that you have is guiding our work. Let's talk about some current challenges. Portland's been facing unprecedented growth that has increased demand on our parks and services and amplifies some of the challenges that the city faces, including climate resiliency, achieving a balance between a reliance on fee revenue while also maintaining equitable access and remaining competitive in the marketplace, something we discussed just last week in a kickoff about cost recovery. We also are challenged to develop and maintain solid and reliable assets with an aging infrastructure that requires significant investment. And we're working towards financial sustainability with the fundamental components of developing a financial plan and cost recovery policy update as high priority deliverables to Council this year. And finally, I mentioned managing the impacts of houselessness and also geographic and demographic changes in our community. The strategic focus area of the Bureau identifies a wide range of actions that fall into four primary areas in the strategic plan. Each is aligned to focus on supporting our mission and advancing Portland Parks and Recreation's new five-year racial equity plan in each of these four areas. The requested budget includes funding requests for the highest priorities that cannot be achieved within existing resources. So the first area of focus in our strategic plan is the stewardship of park land, natural resources, and the urban forest, with the implementation of practices and systems to improve the maintenance, ecological health, and overall quality of park lands and the urban forest. This chart, the graphic, the map you see, is a map of the city, with the darker areas identifying those areas with low income and low tree canopy. This informs the city's tree planting strategy, aiming to promote planting for more equitable access in the lowest income neighborhoods. With climate change upon us, the environmental benefits and resiliency provided by our parks, our natural areas, and our urban tree canopy are critical for all Portlanders. The requested budget includes expansion of the tree permitting program in PK 33 through increased development permit fees to improve service levels and capacity for the permitting and maintenance of the urban forest. This package is responsive to the mayor's initiative to improve the development permit process and timelines by providing additional capacity with 9 additional FTE funded through program revenues. Package PK02 would shift some of the cost of emergency tree removal to other public agencies. Although this has the potential to save general funds, it also relies on the demand that might be created or might not be created by weather emergencies that can be quite inconsistent. Many of the reduction packages we'll touch on later include reductions in the land stewardship division that would impede work in this focus area and the ability to effectively maintain city's natural assets. So now I'm on slide 7. The second area of focus of the strategic plan is to ensure access to recreation programs for all Portlanders, with a special emphasis on the city's most vulnerable populations. This was an important lens in developing the reductions and resource requests in our budget. Considering closure of any community center is unwelcome, both internally and with the public, particularly when there is a need to expand our offerings to meet the demands of a growing community. However, the closures that are offered in this budget were strategic in order to reduce general fund expense and future maintenance liability by focusing on centers that impacted fewer people and avoided those most vulnerable. We'll revisit this issue later when we discuss the packages that propose closure of the Laurelhurst Dance Studio, Woodstock, Selwood, Fulton, and Hillside Community Centers, PK 7, 14, 16, and 17. The cost recovery policy update discussion started with Council last week is the mechanism by which the city, with input from staff and the public, will identify those services that are most core to subsidize with general funds. The goal is to achieve a successful balance between equitable access and adequate program revenues to support services. Scholarships are a key part of that balance. This chart on the screen documents, and the auditor's recent report shows, the increase in scholarships awarded over the years and that the potential demand far exceeds the granted amount shown. Having a fixed scholarship fund would allow the city to offer equal choice to those most in need. Slide 8. During the cost recovery session, Council was clear about focusing on core services and ensuring equitable access for recreation services. Our requested budget includes 3 packages that advance this direction. Last year, Council discontinued all general fund subsidy for the preschool program and directed Parks to implement a full cost recovery program. To accomplish this, preschool fees have been increased up to 49%. To eliminate the need for the general fund subsidy. However, when you're approaching 50% in increase in fees, it was clear to us that the market could not also support an even greater increase to help pay for a scholarship program. PK 26 would provide limited resources needed to create a small scholarship fund for preschool for those that need it the most. PK 29 would similarly provide funding for scholarships for all other recreation services. The auditor's recent report stated that Council should reconcile its conflicting policy direction that calls for access to recreation activities for all with its budget direction to generate increased revenue through fees. Providing budget directly for scholarships is a critical recommendation in the report and will be addressed by funding the request in PK 29. Package PK 30 updates marketing and communications to effectively engage the diversity of Portland's population in more inclusive and culturally appropriate ways. Marketing is a fundamental component of any business model to generate revenue from its services. In a recent survey, 51% of respondents that did not know about the city's recreation services. Expanding the market could improve our revenue potential. The package would redevelop standards to be more inclusive and thus provide better outreach, particularly for the city's changing demographics, including more communities of color, refugees, and immigrants. Next slide. The third focus area is to develop and maintain critical infrastructure in support of one of the mayor's priority areas. In the graph above, it's a little complicated, but I'd like to bring you first your attention to the dotted line above the bar graph. That dotted line represents our annual maintenance funding need of $45 million per year, or 450 over 10 years. Next, you see park maintenance funding by year, going back to 2005-2006. The dark blue or violet bars show the amount of annual maintenance funding coming from the general fund. Major maintenance was not funded prior to fiscal year 2009, but has been a priority for Portland Parks and Recreation to build established or to get established funding under Commissioner Saltzman and Fish's leadership, and has continued under Commissioner Fritz. Although it has grown some, it is not at the level needed, even with supplements from one-time funding. The 2014 Parks Replacement Bond is shown as white in the bar graph, and that has helped address some of the gaps in deferred maintenance. However, we've been making those repairs and replacements, and those funds will likely be completely expended by the end of next fiscal year. The important takeaway in this chart is that the city's annual major maintenance funding gap for park assets is approximately $45 million, which, as Andrew Scott presented yesterday, is for replacement, repair, rehabilitation, and mandates. But note, the overall gap is greater if you also include our needs to grow capacity for a growing community. The asset management industry benchmark is to have 2-3% of your asset replacement value as an annual investment in major maintenance, providing sufficient funds to invest in prevention and repairs. If you get below 2% of funding, then your assets continue to deteriorate. They become very poor condition and significantly more costly and difficult to repair or rehabilitate. Based on parks building assets, we are currently funded at less than 0.2% of the annual replacement value. In other words, 0.1% of the ongoing need for best business practices. There is a need for both one-time investments and ongoing maintenance for the city's parks infrastructure. Next slide. There are several requests for resources that help bridge the gap in major maintenance funding to effectively manage the aging infrastructure in Portland and sustain the award-winning parks and recreation system. Ad package PK24 is a combination of our 20 highest priority critical infrastructure needs, totaling $29.8 million. We recognize that this request alone exceeds the funding available, but this funding would move some of our assets toward a condition at which they can be preserved, as opposed to a risk of closure in the coming years. Some of the highest priorities are listed. PK25 requests an increase to the ongoing major maintenance funding. This would build on prior council investments to gradually increase preventative and responsive maintenance critical to the long-term financial stability of the system. There are several requests that relate to the mayor's priority areas to enhance livability and increase public safety. Like other public spaces in our community, parks are increasingly experiencing impacts associated with societal problems such as houselessness, gang violence, untreated mental illness, and substance abuse. Although not new, the scale and scope have increased dramatically in recent years. People are now communicating to us that they often do not feel safe in our public spaces, including parks. In the 2017 community survey with 2,000 respondents, 30% indicated concern for safety as a barrier to visiting a park. The city is experiencing a significant environmental degradation, and staff are exposed to hazardous materials and face threats, verbal and physical assaults, and erratic behavior while trying to complete their work. Continued efforts to implement policies, training, and practices responsive to our safety task force recommendations are a priority. The final focus area in the strategic plan is on building towards the future of the parks and recreation system. And that includes the next long-term vision. It also includes financial stability and actions to ensure a safe environment for employees and customers. The comprehensive plan adopted by Council in 2016 requires a vision for the parks and recreation system. With the Parks 2020 vision coming to a close, it is time to vision for the next 10 years through a robust discussion with Portlanders on what they need, want, and are willing to pay for in their park system. Package PK27 funds the process critical to gain support and recognition of future needs to maintain a financially sustainable system. Portland Parks will be returning to Council by the end of 2018 on the cost recovery policy update and financial plan. Package PK-28 provides the funding to effectively implement recommendations from these fundamental pieces of a financially sustainable system. Private philanthropic support is also a key part of our financial planning. And PK-35 would invest a small and highly leveraged amount in the fundraising efforts of the Portland Parks Foundation, which was originally created through the Parks 2020 vision and has successfully raised millions of dollars over the years to benefit your park system. At this point, Amy will share some more details on the budget process and the potential impacts of some decision packages.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners, and Budget Advisors. The Parks Budget Advisory Committee includes a diverse composition of Parks Board, Labor, Geographic...
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you please state your name for the record?
Oh, yes, sorry. Amy Archer-Masters, Finance, Property, and Technology Manager.
Thank you.
It includes Parks Board, Labor, Geographic Neighborhood Representation, Communities of Color, Partners, and other stakeholders. The robust process begins in fall and is continuously improving each year. As provided in the requested budget, BAC members refined the framework of sometimes conflicting budget values to evaluate budget packages. The public input process included over 1,000 Portlanders and targeted outreach for input into park priorities from communities that traditionally haven't participated, utilizing the community engagement liaisons, the CELS program through ONI, to engage the Vietnamese, Spanish-speaking, and Russian-speaking communities at public budget meeting, and focus groups with representatives from immigrant communities and Spanish language speakers. The BAC begins with an orientation to programs and services, providing context of the budget, including the summary of prior years on slide 14. 7 of the last 10 years have resulted in budget cuts at parks, with particularly deep cuts starting in fiscal year 2009-10 through 2014. Many of these cuts were reductions to operations and strategies that support bureau-wide work and supervisory positions throughout the bureau. Although this chart shows some increases beginning in 2015, these were not restoration of prior cuts. These increases are new services, such as the addition of the teen program, programs that have moved from other bureaus, like fountain maintenance and loo maintenance, and substantial labor-related increases due to the arbitration settlement. Some of the cuts have also been offset by increased fees that present new challenges and barriers to participation. The cuts and expanded programs without sufficiently increased resources to administration to support those programs continue to challenge the Bureau in maintaining levels of service and delivering core mission. The level of cuts recommended by the City Budget Office would further impact ability to advance the strategic plan and provide core services. Reduction packages were prioritized by the BAC into 1%, 3%, and 5% cut levels to provide guidance to Council and the budget advisors on which cuts are the most harmful. The BAC strongly opposed any reductions beyond 1% as they compromised the city's parks, public spaces, trails, and community centers. Even these recommended packages on slide 15 have some significant risks from increased utility expenses and the unpredictability of weather due to climate change. Fee increases, as those shown on slide 16, are risky when decisions are made without an updated cost recovery policy that takes into account scholarships and other subsidy to maintain equitable access. The Bureau's reliance on fees through aggressive cost recovery is limiting access to our programs for the city's most vulnerable members and threatens PPNR's ability to stay competitive in the market. Although this is a concern, the BAC could not achieve up to 5% reductions without including packages that increase user fees. These include shifting some parks from free and open access to limit it to those willing and able to pay for parking or use other modes of transportation, and 2 packages that increase fees for users of park facilities, including sports fields, picnic shelters, film permits, community gardens, stadium fields, and other facilities. Together, these significantly increase permit costs above inflation, and without the bridge funding for implementation, prices may be too high for the market to meet revenue targets. There are several packages listed on slide 17 that potentially shift fees to partners and other organizations, including utility costs that require negotiation with partners due to existing agreements, decorative and interactive fountains, and maintenance of the downtown transit mall plots. As mentioned earlier, the decision to offer up closure of any community centers, as listed on slide 18, was challenging, particularly as the city needs to expand the system to meet the demands of the community. These centers serve as gathering places for neighbors, and Portlanders value the programs and services offered, including robust preschool and after-school programs, dance classes, and spaces for community events. In identifying these potential cuts, the Bureau considered the number of participants, level of service provided through other centers in the impacted areas, liability of the major maintenance at the facilities, and the demographics of the neighborhoods surrounding the centers. Ideally, you would not make cuts until the financial sustainability plan and cost recovery policies are fully developed. But in the interim, the closure of these four small community centers with large capital requirements is consistent with moving in a more financially sustainable direction that balances service needs with adequate cost recovery. In all cases, commitments have been made to the public through summer, so bridge funding is needed to ensure appropriate transitions, which has not been recommended by CBO. Without that bridge funding, sudden closures would be highly disruptive to the impacted community members. There are a number of packages listed on slide 19 that make significant reductions to core functions to maintain facilities, parks, and natural areas. Employee surveys document a decrease in morale as these functions have seen repeated cuts and workers are stretched too thin, compromising ability to adequately maintain infrastructure and meet the safety needs of staff. Reductions to maintenance, safety checks, and trash removal at undeveloped properties and regional trails presents new risks during a time of increased camping. Reduction of facility maintenance staff would exacerbate significant backlogs in work orders and deferred maintenance at aging facilities. As stated earlier, PP&R has experienced years of cuts and expanded programs without sufficiently increased resources to administration to support those programs. If the resources requested for implementation of cost recovery and financial plan are not funded, then maintaining the already limited operational resources listed on slide 20 are even more critical. The reduction in customer service center would eliminate live telephone support for livability and public safety calls on the weekend, resulting in poor customer service or shifting call volumes to police. To create a more equitable park system, PP&R is actively designing and constructing new and expanded parks and facilities with openings planned over the next several years. The leadership of public involvement staff to organize and support public meetings and events is an important component of successful capital projects. If the position reduction is taken, then the bridge funding requested will be essential to support work that is already committed and in progress. We've spent a lot of time talking about the potential reductions recommended by the CBO because they go very deep. After so many years of reductions, the impacts are significant, and if taken as recommended, your parks and recreation system will further deteriorate, making it harder to sustain. Please consider the impacts of these cuts, particularly as you are not just maintaining the system, but attempting to address inequities that exist. With limited resources, the Bureau ad packages focus on the most effective use of resources to meet the city's priorities. There are a number of packages already discussed that attempt to balance equitable access and financial sustainability, as listed on slide 21. Parks has focused on the growth happening in the city and building new parks to meet that demand and keep our city livable. You have good policies in place to secure ongoing operations and maintenance funding for those new parks out of the increased tax base that comes with that growth. Last year, Council did not provide the administrative overhead requested as part of the O&M formula and directed the Bureau to be specific about administrative needs related to operations and maintenance, which is included in PK 31 this year. Although not supported by the Budget Office, one position for workforce development to deal with personnel management is critical for the volume of work that has grown for a Bureau that has grown by over 50% in recent years. To wrap up my summary, slide 22 includes PK 13 and 37 as examples of investments to support the Mayor's direction for innovation using one-time funds to achieve long-term efficiencies. PK 36 would support resiliency planning with a focus on priorities for multi-purpose community centers, historic buildings, and some neighborhood park structures.
To conclude, I'd like to leave you with a few thoughts. First, Portland Parks and Recreation really represents one of the greatest opportunities the city has to achieve greater equity and inclusion for all Portlanders. Second, we're the stewards of 11,000 acres, 1.2 million trees, meaning that we are also key to helping the city protect our environment and address issues of climate change. Third, the role of Portland Parks and Recreation in creating public safety has never been clearer. From our programs that give kids positive alternatives to spend their time, to our park rangers to help ensure our public parks are safe places. And fourth, the city is faced with a number of social challenges. We've talked about those, but parks is key and positioned well to help address many of those issues. Recreation has never been more important, and I don't envy the tough choices that are ahead of you. Before we move on to questions, I'd like Portland Parks Board Chair Pat Frobes to share a few thoughts. Thank you for your time.
Yep. I'm Pat Frobes, the Chair of the Portland Parks Board. Thanks for allowing me to add a few words to this debate. I know your time's limited, so I will try to be quick. The board certainly appreciates the leadership of Commissioner Fritz and Director Abadi in the budget advisory process. Every year the process has gotten better and the community input much more meaningful, and I think it's very good this year. Mayor Wheeler was gracious enough to spend some time with the Parks Board last week. Thank you for that.
Thank you for having
me. We hope we've begun a constructive conversation about the future our park system will face going forward. I'd like to step back from some of the details of the budget and just make some key points I hope you'll keep in mind as you work through this process. First, a healthy, robust system of parks and open space is an essential city service. It should be thought about and treated just like sewer, waters, and roads. That system contributes to the city's livability and therefore its economic well-being and health of its citizens. The importance of a healthy system of parks and open space only increases with every high-rise that goes up in the city. As Portland becomes more dense, our parks and open spaces provide the sole access to nature and outdoor recreation for more and more of our citizens. Second, a healthy, robust system of parks and open space that is equitably distributed and accessible to all creates community. Our parks, community centers, and open spaces are where disparate individuals come together, create shared experience, shared memories that begin to knit them into neighborhoods, and neighborhoods into a community with shared values and human connection without regard to economic status, age, gender, ethnicity, and many of the other factors that often divide us. Portland Parks Board believes the current approach to funding our system is not sustainable. It puts our historical legacy at risk and undercuts our ability to deliver services to those who have been historically underserved. We get that. The board and the Bureau have done a lot of work to move us to financial stability, but a key to any long-term stable situation will be broad and deep community support. In order to generate that kind of support, we believe we need a compelling vision of what we want our parks and open space system to look like 15 to 20 years from now. A vision that is not just generated by a small group, but is generated in and owned by the community at large. For the last 18 years, the 2020 vision has provided guideposts and framework for decision-making and driven a lot of the development of our system. But Portland has transformed in those 18 years. We need a new vision that is owned by and is compelling for the next generation of parks users. We've asked for funds to create that vision, and we think it's a critical investment in our future. It's the kind of investment the city made over 100 years ago under very similar economic circumstances when Portland was booming. We had a housing shortage and faced many of the same challenges and opportunities that growth presents that we're facing today. We recognize that resources are finite, needs are almost infinite, and we need to plan for the next downturn. So hard choices have to be made. But if we're not willing to make this kind of critical investment in the future of our system in good times, when will we ever be willing or able to do it? Thanks for giving me the opportunity and some time. I hope you keep these in mind, a very difficult task ahead of you. I don't envy that task.
Thank you. Well said, and I appreciate the remarks. And you asked a philosophical question that I spend a lot of time thinking about. And you asked about the nature of the good times in which we're living. I want to temper that enthusiasm. We are not in good times. We are in good economic times from a global perspective, but the reality is this community is being sucker punched all across the board. We're being sucker punched in terms of the opioid and heroin addiction crisis. We're being sucker punched on the housing front. We're being sucker punched with a humanitarian crisis in the form of the homelessness crisis. And for the first time in many, many years, crime rates are actually going up in this community. And believe me, people are screaming at us about it. And so I've agreed with everything you have said. There's nothing that has been said so far in this presentation where I'm not shaking my head going, yeah, that's right, right on. The planning, the resources, the investing in innovation, the making sure that we're equitable. But the reality is we have to go through a forced choice exercise. And it's not going to be a one-time only forced choice exercise. This is what we're going to be doing until there's a fundamental change in the dynamics of the sucker punches that are incoming. And that's really where I think the challenge for this city council is. How do we continue the vision? I mean, the statistic that really pops for me in this, it's like 90% of the people in this city love their parks. They love their parks. For them, you know, if I could just slightly elaborate on what this says, they're saying this is what the city is. This is what they think of when they think of Portland, why they like it. But we're in this forced choice exercise. So I just want you to be aware of that dynamic. Should we take cuts that are in here? I don't want you to think that means we do not support or understand or appreciate the park system. And as Commissioner Fritz laid out right up front, she made it clear she doesn't support any of them. And I just want you to know from the perspective of this council, we hear what you're saying, and you stated it eloquently, but I just have to put a little bit of a different spin on the good times. These are actually the most challenging times I think I've ever lived in.
And I think the Parks Board appreciates that. With all of the opportunities that growth has given it, it's given us all of these other kinds of, not just the growth in Portland, but all of the kinds of problems you identified. And this is a process. I'm not going to concede this year by any stretch.
Nor should you.
And I hope, and I know you've got a lot of forced choice, very difficult choices to make. But as you make those, my point is, ask yourself the question.
Yes, and you're admonishing us, I think, appropriately to think about the long term. You know, govern with an eye to the future, and I think that is an important message.
And I just want to clarify, I would actually be willing to take some of the cuts if we got some of the funding back to do some of the priorities.
That's fair. Anishka?
I have a couple of questions. So I want to understand a little bit of the preschool scholarship request. So there is an $80,000 scholarship for preschool, but then there's also the proposal of closing two community centers that provide preschool. So can you elaborate on that?
Yeah.
Seems like...
So the question,
repeat.
Let me...
I can repeat. So
yeah,
we are, Parks is proposing a request of $80,000 for preschool scholarships. At the same time, eliminating two community centers that provide preschool. So I just want to understand the rationale there.
Excuse me. Eileen Argentina, Recreation Services Division Manager. We're trying to solve a challenge that was created last year in the budget process when general fund subsidy for preschool was eliminated and try to, address council direction that our preschool programs, as long as we have them, that they remain accessible to communities of color and children with disabilities in particular. So that's where that... budget ask comes from. As far as how does that square with the community center reductions, I think Mike and Amy did a good job of saying, you know, we're trying to come up with the least awful or the most responsible cuts in a time when, you know, there aren't easy choices to be made. So in looking at our community center system, we looked at what are those centers where if the general fund operation or the general fund support went away and they ceased operating as parks facilities, can we mitigate the harm to the community and especially the most vulnerable communities? So they're not linked in any strategic way. It's more just trying to respond to the direction.
I'll put it this way, if some of the cuts were taken that close a community center, for example, like Selwood, then obviously if we don't have that program there, we would have no request for scholarships there. So that scholarship fund might go further in the remaining community centers, or it could be reduced.
I just need to add to that. Actually, the centers that were that are on the list are those that tend to be in more affluent neighborhoods, and so those preschool fees, if collected, would actually help to balance out the entire system. So we've tried to mitigate that through the bridge funding, but we'd have to really reconcile what are the impacts of losing those centers on the entire preschool system once the decisions are made.
So council told us last year to make the whole system cost neutral, and that's what this does. The challenge is if you do that completely, then it prices out a number of people. And the way, both for this scholarship request and for the general scholarship request, what we've been doing always is if there's space in a class, a low-income family gets to ask for it. There isn't a formal scholarship application process. There isn't a mechanism to allow equal choice to people with low incomes compared with those who can get in first. So it's been a very inequitable system.
But that's a system problem, not a funding problem.
It is a funding problem because if we were to move to letting people in and then foregoing revenue, then we don't have the money to run the program.
So I have a follow-up on that one and two more questions. The follow-up is that we just sat for a presentation where they point out that daycare is one of the number one factors in Portland losing our middle class. So I just want, and I'm going to have to repeat it a couple of times because it's kind of like the thing that scared me the most of all the presentation. So that, and then the next one is, if we remove the invasive species removal, double negative, do we have anyone that could take it? Any environmental group?
So I'll take that one. Let me maybe try to close the door on the preschool question, because I don't think that the commissioner or even the council felt that there isn't a need for preschool. The question is, are we the only provider? And so council said, of all the people who could provide, Parks is one, but it's not like we're the only one. Where we are the only one for, say, swim lessons and a lot of other kinds of facilities. So the direction last year was raise the fees sufficient so that there's no more general fund going to support preschool. And so that's what we've done and just said, but to do this, if we're going to offer scholarships, we're going to need some money for that. On the Protect the Best program, Protect the Best is an amazing program. It focuses our attention on not the most degraded areas, but actually protecting the most intact, healthy ecological areas, sort of drawing that line in the sand. Over the years, it has been funded jointly by the Bureau of Environmental Services and by Portland Parks and Recreation, and it's been a very successful program. Bureau of Environmental Services funding has been eliminated in the past, and so we're left with a smaller program. So if Protect the Best is eliminated, and it will have a significant impact on natural resources, particularly those areas that have not been overcome with invasive species.
Thank you. And last one. If we reduce the downtown restroom cleaning, is there anyone else that will take it?
No, the facilities that are cleaned we would continue to maintain. It would just be cutting the resources in half, so we would be doing it half as often as we do now. It would bring it in line with the same level of service that we have in other parts of the city, but because of the demographics and the frequency of use, the customer base downtown, obviously the impact is different. So the change would be felt.
Cleaning them once a day instead of twice a day.
I have a question, I guess, related to that, which is directed more, I guess, to CBO, which says, by directing the restroom needs of the homeless populations to certain facilities and focusing cleanup services on the high issues parking and restrooms, CBO believes this reduction could be taken without significantly impacting downtown park users. Do you think at the CBO that we can successfully redirect the homeless population to not use these restrooms as much?
So, yeah, there obviously had to be some strategic direction to focus where certain restrooms would be more frequently cleaned in order for that to be effective. One of the issues that Parks noted in sort of our back and forth response was that restrooms that are in high use are cleaned and then, you know, basically used immediately afterwards. And so the effectiveness of that cleaning is really sort of temporary and dependent upon sort of how how much use they receive immediately after, like, that most recent cleaning. And so there is sort of like just an issue of like how frequently do you need to clean the restroom in such a way for it to be usable by large portions of the population.
So if I'm hearing you right, it sounds like you're saying that a twice-a-day cleaning is kind of futile potentially because of the high frequency of use, and that reducing it to once a day is an acknowledgement of that?
That was one of the things that the Parks Bureau had indicated, that there was challenges in just trying to maintain the level of service at those restrooms.
I particularly hate this one. I mean, I think it's been clean in San Diego and elsewhere, that public health issues, but we were required to provide this level of cut, and there's been recommendations for a lot of them to be taken.
Okay, I also hate this one.
So, kids, where are you from? Atkinson. All right, what grade? What grade? Third grade. Wow. All right, welcome. Welcome to Portland City Hall. It's nice to have you all here. Thanks for being here.
Wow. Mike, let me jump in. Our wonderful volunteer community members have actually hit three of my questions, so thank you for getting those on your list. There is a small item for increasing permit fees for film-related activities. Now, the budget office has recommended one more bridge year of general fund support for the Office of Film, but our shared goal is to find a way to make that fully sustainable off of the fees. Is this, in your judgment, a down payment towards getting to a better cost recovery model, which could make the office and the people who interact with the office sustainable, in other words, covered by fees?
Yes, Commissioner, that's we're looking at cost recovery, increasing cost recovery on a number of things, including the film office. This would not just affect the film office. It affects a whole list of things, special events. It affects wedding reservations, right, all of those kinds of things. But we're looking for, pretty be frank, you know, every opportunity to increase some cost recovery in areas where we think there's some flexibility.
And I think what I want to just make sure is that we're all aligned, because the project we're working with OMF, Andrew's office on is moving to a model where the film office is sustained from the fees that are generated from the work that they actually do.
Right.
And the industry has said they pay a little more to cover those, right, so we're looking to do that.
So maybe we could be a part of that discussion and
crucial part,
consideration. Yeah.
You're one of the two, probably the two bureaus of the most important, maybe one of three bureaus of the most important on that. The other thing I wanted to highlight, although not because I think we have to spend a lot of time talking about this morning, is one of the really big issues that's in the report is PK8, and that's the fountain elimination. And as I read the thoughtful write-up, what I take away from it is there's two questions on the table: who pays for fountains, and who does the work? And those are pretty fundamental questions. And there's a lot of history, and I've just started weighing in on this issue, and people have different views about where the expertise is and who should pay for it. What I'd like to do, though, is suggest that we pull together a meeting of the right people from Parks and the Water Bureau in next week or so, and we have this conversation, because there's some history that I think we need to share, that you have some history that we need to hear, and vice versa. And then again, two questions have been posed: who pays for it and who does the work? Let's start with the two bureaus most impacted.
Sure.
Let's have a conversation about that, and let's think short-term and long-term, because clearly this is going to be a big part of our discussion going forward. So we welcome that. I would just ask that we get the right people in the room so we can begin what I think is a very important and long overdue question. But, you know, given the last 5 years and some of the experience that the utilities have had dealing on a number of fronts, including where they invested their money, how the public perceived that, and the like, we want to make sure we get this right.
Right. Be happy to participate and get the right people in the room, Commissioner.
And by the way, just one related piece. If I look at your excellent presentation and we start thinking about the world through the mayor's eyes, which is that we may end up having tougher budgets going forward, and that's even without there being a big like a recession or some change in the economy, which would exacerbate that. Are you exploring aggressively models like conservancies and other things where we can engage private sector support? And I'm thinking Halperin is one example, but there are many. Are you looking aggressively at creating some new legal mechanisms so that we can capture the value of private sector players that actually want to help us do our job?
Yeah, absolutely, Commissioner. We've always been open and actually sort of trying to push the envelope on new ways of funding things. Certainly, as I mentioned, the Portland Parks Foundation is in this year's budget. The Halperin LID, Halperin Conservancy LID, has been very successful. And I know the Commissioner and I have both talked to community members who want to think about other kind of conservancy models that we could use in select places, particularly where there are folks who would be willing to help pay for that. So very open to that kind of innovative way of thinking. The key thing for me, I would say, and I don't want to speak for council, is that whatever we do, we want them to function for the public, right? That the public has access to them. Some of the models around the country may look like a public park, but are actually closed off and have completely different rules and completely different security, and may look to a tourist like they're a public park, but they're not really. And so those are some subtleties that I think we'd want to talk about, but I think there are some great models that we should explore.
I actually have a follow-up question, sorry, related to that, which is for the Hillside Community Center closure that's proposed, because of the ordinance that's in place that it has to be used for park purposes, there's language in the CBO, a review that suggests that transferring it to a private partner would be necessary. Has a private partner been identified? And I mean, where are you in that process? If so, and if that is going to be the case, that are there going to be guarantees about service delivery that keep it consistent with what's currently in place? I mean, if we transfer it, the city transferred to a private partner, and it's, as you were saying, its usage is restricted as a result of that, then that's going to be problematic.
So we did have a nonprofit partner that we've been talking to for several months since we generated this, and they just told us last week that they could not take this on, that they don't have the capacity. So at this point, we don't have an identified partner, but we would go through a public process to see, you know, a request for interest to see if there are other folks that might be interested. But I guess it'd be fair to say our best lead has not panned out.
I just had one more question, which is related to the request in here for a parking assessment. The concern that I heard from neighbors when Washington Park put parking fees in place was one related to access for low-income visitors to that park. I wonder about how carefully the Bureau is thinking about putting parking fees in place for parks that are not easily accessible by public transportation, if that's a major factor in your calculations?
Yeah, part of our intent in that package was to, in the first year, to propose the reduction, but in the first year, focus on doing a study, conducting a study, so that we could really evaluate the locations that we think are the potentials, what the impacts would be, what the transportation options are, and really be thorough in that assessment based on our past experience. At this point, you know, the way that it's recommended, we don't have the funds for that assessment, and there's an assumption that we'll achieve the savings right away. So I think there's a little bit of a challenge in the implementation of that, but the intention is for the assessment to really kind of vet out all of those issues that you raise.
So I guess just a quick follow-up for CBO. It looks like there's $100,000 coming out of general fund money for that and $100,000 going into one time. So is that the idea that they're going to be using existing funds to do that assessment, or how's that supposed to work?
Hi, Rob. Thank you for the question. So the rationale for that recommendation is basically the $100,000 would be supplementing revenues that they wouldn't be getting, since revenues are collected on the calendar year cycle rather than fiscal year. And the $50,000 for the study was actually thinking that parks would fund that internally, but out of the idea that there are certain parks that, you know, have the ability to put in parking fees without needing a study, like those, that's an identified need already. So that was kind of the rationale, the $100,000 for the fees and not recommending the money for the study.
Okay. A question. So every year, as long as I can remember, at least in recent memory, you propose cutting Selwood, Woodstock, Fulton and Hillside, and you know, it stresses out all the people that come to the budget hearings. We don't end up cutting them. So I'd like to ask you for an alternative package that achieves the same 400 or 1,000 or so reductions without cutting frontline services. Could you develop that for me?
Without cutting any other community
centers? Without cutting the community centers or frontline services, yeah. No. Roughly $400,000.
I don't think it's true, actually, Commissioner, that we haven't put all those community centers on the cut list every year.
Well, they were last year, at least. And
some of them were, but not the, yeah. Not others.
Well, I would like to ask for an alternative cut package that achieves the $400,000 or so by not cutting those community centers, but by cutting something that's not a frontline service.
So we could tell you what was next on the list that the Budget Committee recommended not to put on the list.
Well, I'm really asking the management to show the
Commissioner,
leadership
I
and do this for me.
I will. We will suggest something, but I will say that maintenance of parks is a frontline service. Programs that we run in a park are a frontline service. Taking care of our natural areas are frontline services. Virtually everything we do is a frontline service. And as Amy discussed, as we have grown by 50% in terms of number of full-time employees, our operations and administration has not grown commensurately. And so there aren't hidden closets, hidden positions that are not directly connected with delivering frontline services.
Nevertheless, I'd like to ask you to take a stab at it for me.
Okay. Question. Last year, we devoted general fund dollars to public golf courses. I don't see any mention of golf courses in this this year.
As I said last year, we will not be doing that again.
Right, but I am wondering, is it then safe to assume that these golf courses are all self-sufficient? Because when I see that we're considering cutting the hours for like interactive fountains and splash pads to save money on water, I have to ask, why wouldn't we be looking at golf courses, which are incredibly resource-intensive?
Commissioner, as an enterprise fund, it is golf and PIR are funded by their own revenue. So there is no general fund impact to golf.
Right.
I will say that the commissioner is leading us through a process of evaluating our golf program in general to see are there things we should do, changes in staffing, should we have the number we have, but it would not have an effect on the general fund.
Okay, thank you.
Frida?
I have a few questions. First, on the scholarships, I'm not against. I'm just curious what you estimate. How many children will be impacted with the scholarships?